It's another edition of the Crystal 93 Snow Show. This week, it's more fun on the snow from Colorado Ski Country USA with your Snow Show hosts, Tom Fricke and Leon Joseph Littlebird.
In person on the Colorado Snow Show.
Tom, every time you do that old retro radio introduction, I just have to laugh because 11 years we did that show on the radio.
On Crystal 93. You can hear us every weekend.
That's right.
Yeah. And back in the day when we started out with the snow show, it was a... quit playing with your microphone, man.
Sorry.
Yeah, okay. I'm
a rookie.
Rookies.
It was a Copper Mountain exclusive show.
That's right.
When it started.
The first 2 years.
Yeah.
And we did every show from Copper, and boy, we were starving for content, man. I mean, it was like we would even talk to ski patrollers.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how desperate it got. I mean, it got so bad
that we said
maybe we could talk to, you know, because everybody knows that patrollers are only in the business because they get to make first tracks
right.
every day.
Yep.
Right? I mean, it's... The whole reason they do it.
That's a fallacy. That's fake news.
And everybody knew it at the time. So, and we thought, well, maybe if we hung out with some patrollers, we could make first tracks.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we met this guy named Sam Parker.
You just had to hang around with the right one.
That's right. Exactly.
Sam, welcome to the Snow Show, brother. We have had so many great years with you.
It's been a long time.
It's been a long time.
Well, since all three of us were, you know, telling lies.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
back in the day.
The thing is, all three of us are really good at it.
Yeah.
That's why we're still friends.
There we go.
Yeah.
There we go.
Oh, man, I just remembered one of the big stories when we were out with Copper Mountain Ski Patrol, and it was the Abbey Dogs. And the team from Gore-Tex was in town testing out some new mittens with the ski patroller.
And I explained to them that was the Gore range they were looking at, and that it was an old Native American tradition that the porcupines who lived in the pine trees in the Gore range had skin that when you tanned it would breathe on one side and repel water on the other side. And that was the very first Gore-Tex, and that's how Gore-Tex got its name. And these guys were Gore-Tex engineers.
Right.
And they believed me.
They were
and
with the
Sam
corporation.
Said,
it's all true. It's all true. You've got to believe everything that Leon tells you.
Think something about a Native American tale or something like that.
Yeah. Or some old Native Americans believe that or something like that. Yeah, like, I couldn't believe it because, you know, I was pulling their legs so hard. And these guys are execs from Gore-Tex, and they believe that that's how Gore-Tex got its name.
They bought into the whole thing.
Of course, we had them at, 11,000 feet, and they were in rental gear. and they were out of their element. And then we buried Tom that day, remember?
Right.
We buried him in an avalanche chute and then brought the dogs out, and then I buried that cheeseburger, you know, up 50 yards.
Works every time.
And the dogs went right for Tom.
They found me first.
He smells better than the cheeseburger. So
that was a fun time, though, getting buried safely in an avalanche pit.
You know what Tom did while he was in the cave, don't you?
I really don't want to know.
Well, it's on a porn site if you want to see it.
It's a good thing it was dark in there.
Selfie porn, right? No, he ordered a pizza.
He ordered a pizza. Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, he ordered a pizza.
I figured the dogs might find the pizza or me or the cheeseburger.
If he had the pizza delivered, the dogs would find it for sure.
Oh, good time.
You know, another great time, Sam, that I remember when you were running the ski patrol at Copper Mountain. We rode up the snowcat up Tucker.
Yep.
And we were up there, and you turned us on to some really amazing terrain. Remember that?
I told my daughter, who's out there patrolling now in her sixth year, that the greatest thing about when I was working there was the chance to do that exploratory stuff, the chance to get onto terrain that was in the expansion plan. And fortunately for her, she's very much involved in doing that now.
Well, and stuff a phenomenal that skier.
They're planning on, you know, getting to soon.
Yeah,
soon.
Isn't that cool?
So, you know, she's doing the exact same stuff I was doing.
And
that's what really was the beauty of the time, right? It wasn't just ski patrolling on the front side of a hill. It was, you know, going out and poking around in places that you knew the ski area was going to eventually expand into. And so she's been up on top of Jacques skiing a bunch of stuff over there last spring. And
Ann's been my hero since she was a little kid.
Well, you know, I'm grateful that you've decided that I'm more interesting than she is.
And you're nowhere near as good looking.
The fact of the matter is, you should have her on this podcast.
Well, the thing is we, you know, we just want to get the old guys on while we still have them around. You know, so you know, and here we are at A Basin, sitting in the Sixth Alley. You know, like where we should be, but it snowed 9 inches last night.
Yeah, me and Sam made a few runs.
Oh, yeah. How cool is that?
Super soft underfoot.
It was nice.
Such a refreshing feeling.
Well, everybody knows 25 has been the year of un.
Right.
And, you know, it's really funny because I looked it up. It was 75, 76, 85, 86, 95, 96, and 25, 26.
Wow.
It's like, we got snow. It was an anomaly.
Well, and it'll always.
That's when climate change hit.
It's been going on for a while. You know, it seems like it always snows in February. I'm holding out for that. But today was, you know, a nice surprise.
Well, after a season that started out really slow, I mean, we've been very dry. And I read somewhere that December was the driest on record.
On record. And warmest.
And warmest in the entire Southwest, not just Colorado.
Right, right.
Yeah. So, weirdly warm. Weirdly warm. Super windy and weirdly warm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and Sam, last time I saw you and your beautiful bride, Paula, who we all adore, was at the World Cup ski races at Copper Mountain. And we were hanging out there at the VIP tent.
I was outside looking in.
No, I let you in, man. Come on, man. I was checking credentials, and I acted like you had one. You know?
Yeah, I appreciate that.
You looked like you needed a hot chocolate. Man. And so wasn't that a great event for us to have? Right here in Summit County is the world. And to have the men and the women back-to-back. And Copper did a great job. And that's all, you know, you and I worked together for Copper for many years.
Yeah.
I was in the ski school side, you're on the patrol side, but we were there for what, 8 years together, nine years together?
At least. I think it was the snow show that got us introduced. I'm not sure how
I remember what it was. I came to you because I wanted the ski instructors to make a stronger connection with patrol. And I asked you if I could bring them up to have patrol make a presentation, remember? And you and I started talking. We wrote up the accelerator, and I said, "Why aren't you on vocals and Technica?" And you said, "I don't have a sponsor." I said, "And I said, we're calling Joe Decker." And I called Joe Decker, and we got you hooked up right then and there. And that's how it started.
And I went to his house down on Green Mountain. He grew up.
Yep.
His house is on the opposite side of Green Mountain from where I grew up. Huh. And I went to his house. And he stepped out, and he kind of looked, you know, did one of those, kind of looked me up and down. And you're a friend of Leon's? Yeah, I am. And he was remarkably gracious. I appreciated the fact that, you know, that was the
connection. Well, and you were on that program for years, weren't you?
And then, you know, they transitioned out of vocal and picked up Blizzard.
Right.
And so it was Blizzard Technica, and I was on Blizzards for decades.
Yeah, well, Tom and I, too, we went with Blizzard, too, and mostly because of our friends and who we were connected with, because Technica boots fit me so well.
Yeah, right out of the box.
Out of the box.
Yep. Yeah.
Both Tom and I are skiing on the Cochise 130, you know, the pro.
Yep.
And it's put the footbed in.
Yep.
And warm them up. You know, tighten them down, put on your favorite rock concert, and walk around the house for half an hour, and then go ski in them because you're all set.
Yeah. Now, Joe was, you know, he ended up coming on board at Podium.
Right.
And he was a rep for Skins, which is a compression base layer.
Yeah, we wore Skins for years.
With bioacceleration technology.
You know, it was awesome because the rest of the crew, the rest of the ownership group definitely knew about skis and boots. They didn't know much about bikes, and so they just kind of said, okay, you're going to be the bike guy. And so I would go to Interbike in Vegas every year, and Joe would have a booth, and they did the U.S. Crit Finals on one night, and then the next night was Cross Vegas, which was a big cyclocross race. And so, you know, while everybody else was at the show, not so much from our neck of the woods, but everybody else would come to Las Vegas, and they'd go into the casinos, and they'd be drinking. I'd be out watching bike races because it was way more fun. And Joe had...
Especially cyclocross.
Joe had a tent on the first corner after the straightaway on the inside of the corner for the crit finals. And it was, you know, in a parking lot, so there was kind of a greasy surface, and it was a bit of a crash central. And you had the front row seat, and Joe was out there, you know, handing out stuff to free things to drink, free things to eat.
Joe is the ultimate salesman.
You had the front.
He's the greatest salesman that ever lived. I've said that about Joe Decker for years, and you know, I did sales training for many years, and Joe is the epitome of eat, breathe, sleep. He's the greatest. Absolutely. And you know that, Tom, that's another thing that Sam and I have in common is Davis Finney.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because Sam has trained with Davis for years.
I worked for their cycling camps for 15 years.
Yeah, and you know, and back when I was still racing Masters, Davis and Ron Kiefel, and I trained with those, and they were juniors, you know, and so Davis and I became lifelong friends, you know, and then so when Sam and I met with Hannah, we had Davis Finney coming. That was just another, oh yeah, okay. And then here's my favorite Sam Parker story. We're in Toscato's, the old Italian restaurant on Main Street that no longer exists, you know. So I'm leaving, and there's Sam and Paula and his two young children, his 10-year-old son, Ian, and his she would have been about seven or eight. And Sam calls me over. Yeah, he goes, you know, Ian would really like to ask you some questions. And Ian goes, what's it like to be a professional musician? And I said, don't do it. Because you will make hundreds of dollars. And, you will spend your entire life doing nothing but playing music and walk away with hundreds of dollars. Well, no, that's not what I said. That is not what I said. I encouraged him. I said, oh, you like playing music? And he was playing viola at the time, right?
Yeah.
And piano.
Yep.
And ended up going to DU, getting a scholarship, and now he's our favorite musician. And Ian Parker, Metal Mountain, played Red Rocks. I was so proud. I was next to you and Paula. I was as proud as a guy can be to see Ian playing Red Rocks. You know, it's like he made it from that conversation on, and now he is carving violins.
Yeah, yeah. So he graduates from the Chicago School of Violin Making in August, and they'll be moving back to Denver. He and his lovely wife Morgan, and you know, he. He didn't listen to you when you said, you know, don't do it.
He's
excited about coming home. But, you know, my high school graduation ceremonies were at Red Rocks. And I probably snuck into as many shows as I paid for.
Oh, me too, yeah.
And I've seen hundreds of shows there.
Me too.
And, you know, to be sitting out in the audience and watch your kid walk out on stage. Just one of those moments.
You know, my very first rock and roll concert that I saw at Red Rocks was the Beatles. 1964. I'm older than you are.
You are. I'll freely admit that. You know, they had a, when Jethro Tull came and played, and you know, the crowd got rowdy, and they started to storm the gates, and of course then they brought in the Parks Police and they tear gassed the entire crowd. And my brother was there.
I was there.
My
and
brother was there.
You know
at
who I was
show.
With? Dogger.
Oh.
And we had climbed up on the rocks. We weren't in the seats. And
back when you could climb up on the rocks.
Right. And we'd climbed up on the rocks, you know, and so if you're looking from the stage up, it would be stage left, you know, up on the rocks.
Yeah.
And we got up there, you know, before the sun went down. And you know, we smoked so much hash. We were doing mescaline. It was like it was, and we were so high, and we saw that whole thing go down. We were tripping our brains out, but it was so dark because all the lights went out.
Right.
Everything went dark.
Right.
We couldn't see our way down, right? Because we had jumped across rock chasms in those rocks.
Yeah,
and it looked like you were jumping into the abyss. So we sat there. Until daylight.
I never
and
had to
we
do
went
that.
Down, and I was driving a 1962 Austin Healey Mark II, right? And the top was down. We're just sitting in the parking lot, right? You wouldn't do that today for any, right?
The last car left in the
only
parking lot.
The only car left in the parking lot was my Austin Healey sitting there with the top down. No one had touched it.
Oh, man.
Right? And
So that kind of interrupted, you know, having rock shows at Red Rocks for a number of years.
Well, didn't they decide that they were never going to have a rock show again at Red Rocks after the Jethro Tull
incident? Yeah, that was Mayor Bill McNichols.
Yeah.
Said that.
And so in 70-something, 72, I think it was, they started to relax it a little bit, and the Eagles came. And this is before Joe Walsh, before, you know, when the Eagles were still kind of in their transition from folk to, you know, a more modern.
When they were still an acceptable rock and roll band.
American rock band.
They were still doing peaceful, easy feeling type songs.
And that's the show that I saw. And, you know, Glenn Frey got out there and, you know, first words out of his mouth, you know, "Hello, Colorado, we're the Eagles from California and we're here to rock and roll." And they lit it up. And, you know, that was kind of the first rock show back. And I happened to have bought tickets for that show and was there with all my buddies from high school. And,
you know,
that went on. And, you know, I saw Clapton there. I saw all sorts of people.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I down in it up top, you know, you go in that restaurant and they have the Hall of Fame thing.
Yeah.
You know, where they have every concert listed. And I went in there one day with my phone. When I was performing that day, I was doing a private party up there. So I had like a half hour before I went on. And so I went and I started counting all the shows I had seen. And I got up to like 76 and I wasn't even close to done. Right? And it was like, "Leon, you go on in five." It's like, "Oh, shit." And so I'm pretty sure it's 100 or so shows that I've seen there. And I saw I saw Bette Midler play at Red Rocks, and she introduced this guy that was her piano player, and she said, "We're going to let him do a couple songs by himself in our break here." His name was Barry Manilow, or Barely Man Enough, you know. Yeah.
So, you know, Ian, when it was announced that they were going to open for Leftover Salmon, you know, I went through the roof, and, you know, we have a copy of the poster that has them listed on it, and I had mentioned to Ian.
Did the boys all sign it?
No.
Oh, come on. Oh, man.
We have a different poster. We have a different poster that they've signed.
Oh, okay.
You know, I had mentioned that in 72 or 3, the Grateful Dead played two shows on Memorial Day and liked it so much that they came back and played three shows over Labor Day. And I went and saw all five of them. And so Ian sends me a photograph. As we're out in the audience waiting for them to come out on stage, he sends me this photograph of him pointing to the five shows on the plaque for that year that the Grateful Dead had played.
Cool.
And I said, you know, your name's going to be on a plaque there somewhere. Meadow Mountain's going to be on
that plaque.
I was
at the first two and then one over Labor Day, because then I had gigs and I could only make one show over Labor Day. But, yeah, boy, Red Rocks. And, you know, we're so proud of Ian. And you know, and Tom and I have a really special connection with Ann.
Yes. I heard a little bit more about that.
Tom, why don't you tell the story about how you and I have a very special connection.
Well, we're skiing at Copper Mountain, having a beautiful day in the sunshine and doing videos with Reverend Rick.
Yeah.
And just taking it nice and slow. And I was shooting video of both of you guys. And we're just, you know, like ski instructors like to do, ski examiners. They like to examine things and pick apart all the motions. So I'm following Reverend Rick and making some turns good. Got some video from him, and I see Leon's ahead, so I'm going to go catch up with Leon. And we're all on a green run, and I'm getting close to Leon. I've got the selfie stick way out with the video camera at the end of it, getting some good video from Leon, like, oh, he'll like looking at this. And then Leon cranks a huge right turn right in front of me, and I was following way too close. And we collided and went down. Leon popped right back up, and I stayed down. I couldn't get right back up.
Yeah, it didn't sound like it was comfortable.
No, not at all.
Well, it's funny, because I didn't know who hit me, because he kind of hit the back of me, and so I got up, and it knocked the wind out of me, and I got out of my skis and got back up, and Rev Rick had caught up with us.
Right.
And he was looking at me. You had about three people around you, because you did a Superman into the snow. And we were, you know, it was an easy run, but we were hauling ass.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we were going 35 miles an hour, and so I got up and said, "Who hit me?" And he goes, "Tom." I go, "What?" My best friend just ran into me. And I look over, and Tom's going, "I can't breathe." So I say, "Oh, shit." So I'm immediately on Tom, right? And I sit down behind him and give him like a little chair of my legs to sit on so he can sit up. And we're trying, you know, and who comes down? Well, first a patrol got there, and then it was code yellow. and Ann Parker in charge, large and in charge. And
so I told you she was more interesting.
And she's going, and they're obviously going to. Tom had six broken ribs and a collapsed lung, so he was going down in the sled, and they were going to get him to the clinic, and I was fine. But Ann goes, Leanne, you need to ride down. Ann, I think I'm okay. She goes, no, why don't you let me take you down? You know, and she's smarter than I am. And I was like, no, I'm okay. I can ski. And I said, can you believe that Fricky and I ran into each other? She goes, oh, my parents run into each other. So, Sam, that one's on you, bro. You and Paula have run into each other.
Yes, we have.
So now we got to hear that story.
the first year we dated, so 80.
Was this Crested Butte?
Crested Butte,
yeah.
84. And I had been there on patrol exchange like a week before and, you know, had a great exchange and, you know, phenomenal place to ski. And so Paula and I are skiing. We get up to the top of the old Silver Queen and, you know, we're starting to make our way down and things are opening up. And I thought, well, I'll just come in over the top. There's a tree island. I'll make a turn at the tree island and then I'll come in behind her and be below her. Well, I never made that turn at that tree island, right? I got about halfway through and then cartwheeled right across the front of her skis, ripped a ski pole out of her hand, broke it. And when I stood up, unbeknownst to me, I had a broken fibula. And I couldn't press forward into the ski boot. I couldn't put the ski back on and press forward into the boot. So I had to one ski, which I'm terrible at. She and the kids, she and Paula and Ian, absolutely, they've mastered that technique when the kids were tiny and Paula used to run
the ski racing kids.
You run one ski gates.
Yeah.
So I was terrible at it, and, you know, I'm making a complete fool out of myself, and this is one of the first dates we're on, and it's like...
And Paula's a race coach, so she's been doing that for years.
I wonder how she likes me now. Yeah. She was quick to point out that, you know, my technique didn't. it wasn't as big as my mind.
Sam, let's just be straight with each other since we're friends. She's a better skier than
she
you
was.
Are.
Yeah. Yes. All you know, Ian.
It always
Paula.
Will be. Yeah, yeah. In the Parker family, you try and keep up.
It took Ian a while to admit that Ann was the best skier in the family. You know,
but she is.
But you know, one he finally did, and she is.
She is.
She is.
Yeah, I've watched Ann run GS, and
she has the gift. I think
she has the gift.
Yeah. Every year she's patrolled,
she's gotten better.
She's gotten an award for the patroller most likely to ski a groomer on a powder day. and she will tell you that's not true. That she loves skiing powder as much as anything, but. When everybody else is inside complaining about the fact that it hasn't snowed for a week and it's bulletproof, she certainly knows how to go out and have fun on that kind of snow.
Well, you know, when you grow up ski racing your entire life, bulletproof is not scary. It's like friendly. It's like you know how to ski it.
Yeah.
And there's one thing that we know because we've had that privilege growing up here. Just how to stand on an edge and make it work.
I'm still learning.
And plus the fact that we've also been very fortunate to have sponsors and shit. So, you know, we still have lots of skis.
Yeah,
so we can look at it. We show up, it's like, you know, we open the back of our car, there's four pair of skis, right? it's not like you have one pair on the roof of your car and that's the ski you're going to ski on.
Well, Ann took the whole ski racing thing quite a ways, didn't she?
She 2 years for 2 years out of high school were gap years.
Yeah.
And then she raced for a year in college and learned pretty quickly that, you know, in Colorado you can drive 2 hours in any direction and have a season's worth of events to go to. When she was at Montana State, you know, she was driving to races that were in the Midwest, in the far west, and it got to a point where, you know, she had to draw the line and either become a student or try and struggle along at being a ski racer. And, you know, fortunately, unfortunately, she pulled the plug on ski racing. She played a season of rugby at Montana State because she'd played here for the high school. and
for the championship girls all-time, never again to be that. How many years have they been the champions of rugby?
I think it's 16 or 17 now.
I thought it was 300. I thought this started in the 1700s, but
she was a part of three
championship
teams there, and but you know she. After a season of rugby at Montana State and the ski racing, you know, just getting harder and harder. And her feeling like if I keep trying to chase this, I'm going to not do well in school and I have to do well in school.
Right.
She had a partial academic scholarship. She was in the Honors College and both of those things required a GPA. And she's
and
like,
the thing
okay.
is, there's no money in ski racing. I mean, you know, it costs you money to get to where you make money. You know, and the people that make money are the very few. They're the elite, you know, less than 2%.
Two or three.
Yeah,
right now
you know,
in
it's you know, and we're really lucky this year, especially on the women's side, that we have so many really good skiers. You know, it's funny. Have you seen the two sisters, Liz and Elizabeth and Mary Bocock?
Bocock, yep.
Lisa grew up with their dad.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and so, you know, Lisa tolerates me watching ski racing incessantly and you know, in the mornings when we're having coffee and she's going, well, there's your girls, you know. It's like, you don't understand. The women are, you watched Michaela, the most precise skier that's ever lived. Right, and now the other girls are catching on, so it's really good because they're getting faster. And you watch that skiing, and you see perfection. And she goes, Mary Bocock. I know her dad. I grew up with her dad in Virginia. And isn't that cool? And so now all of a sudden, Lisa's really interested in two of the racers. But and that's that's the thing about ski racing is we feel like family when we've. Experienced that and gone through that because it's such a unique thing in itself.
Well, and that was the beauty of the World Cup races at Copper.
Yeah,
you know those 4 days of racing. You know, you walked around in the finish area in the corral down there. You know, where you could just stand and watch. You weren't part of the stands. You were just down there milling about, and it was like you knew 90% of the people that were walking around in there. Because, you know, I mean, the ski...
Did you see Otto Schutte?
The ski... I did not.
Yeah.
I did not.
Well,
you know,
he's...
Old DU guy.
He's stifled. He's stifled.
Gotcha. I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
An old DU guy.
Yeah. And but, a great skier.
Yeah.
You know, he's still racing? He still goes to race camps?
Unreal. Because that was one of those guys
he's
that was...
He's in his 70s.
That was, you know, I was watching when I was 13, 14.
Yeah, yeah.
And starting to pay attention to skiing.
Well, when I was skiing with Hank Cashua and Paul Carson and all those cats on the Pro Tour, you know, Otto was right there, man.
Yep.
Otto was lighting it up. And, you know, that was Henri Douillard and Joseph Odermatt and all those cats, you know. And that was so much fun. The pro races were... I actually got, this is the highlight of my entire ski career in racing, I got to forerun the Super G at Winter Park. They ran one Super G for the pro races at Winter on you know, Hughes.
Yep.
And I got to forerun it on 215 Fisher Super Gs.
Now, that was back when they still had jumps in the courses.
No, there was a jump in the Super G, right? Because that was for the spectators.
Manufacturer jump.
Yeah. It was a ledge.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, it was only like 6 feet. But, you know, you're landing on a steep plane. So
sure.
if you didn't pre-jump it, you went way too far.
Well, in the whole format, you know, slalom and GS, they had two of those manufactured pro bumps.
Right. Pro bumps, yeah.
And, you know, they were a 6-foot drop, and you had to get your feet back on the ground.
It was the photo op of all time because you're coming off the jump
You're
edged, right?
Yeah.
You're ready for the next gate.
Yeah.
So you come off the jump, and you're already anticipating the next gate. So there they are in the air with their skis out.
Already like in an airplane turn.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was awesome. Yeah, that I'll never forget that day. I've never been so scared in my entire life.
But
or
you
maybe
made it.
The time I skied Keystone skiing Go Devil when we were doing that thing for Fred and Niter.
Oh,
you know,
right.
We were doing the benefit, and they had closed off the top to bottom down Go Devil of Keystone for us to raise money for the SIDS Foundation. And we were getting paid for every lap we made. And I was skiing with Phil Mayer. And so we had made like 3 laps. And it was It was buffed out. It was ballroom. And we had skied it, and so we're riding up the lift. He goes, what do you want to do? I said to him, what do you want to do this run, Phil? He goes, let's tuck it.
Go straight. Let's just go straight. So, I'm tired of making turns. So, I've been making turns my whole life.
Right. So think about this. You're following Phil Mayer, right? Right. And so I'm we're just going straight down.
And it's terrain that he's very familiar with.
Well, we're all because he did all those race camps over there. And Go Devil's one of our favorite pitches. That bottom pitch is steep. So we come around, and I'm thinking, I'll just keep Phil in sight, right? I'll just try and stay as close to him as I can. And we come across that thing, and we're going maybe 55 at the top of that, where you make that S turn, coming into the top of the steep of Go Devil, and then he just hit the gas pedal. And I saw him start to move away from me, and so I was saying to myself, stay aggressive, stay aggressive, stay aggressive. And we get to, so we get back on the lift, and I go, holy shit, we had to be going 60. He goes, 70? It's like, oh, wow, man, that's, yeah.
I used to follow the kids. You know, Ian was probably 14, Ann would have been 11, and they'd be training over there all the time on Go Devil.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was on a wider ski. They're on race skis and, you know, pulling away. And it's like, well, I could keep up with them. But I don't want to.
I don't want to scare myself that bad. Well, that fortunately that day I was on the perfect ski. I was on a World Cup GS ski because I knew we're just gonna be running laps, and so I was, you know, I was on the right ski, and I knew that, so I had confidence. But oh, Sam, the pucker factor, right? I mean, because everything's blurry. Your peripheral vision is just a blur.
Right.
And all you can do is look straight ahead and focus on where you're going to be in the next 2 seconds, which is 100 yards ahead. Because you are moving.
Yeah. Well, it was, you know, fortunately, I think we've all had our tip-overs that hurt. And so, you know, what, ski a little differently now. I still... My wife and kids still accuse me at times of skiing too fast, but it's ratcheted back a bit.
You know, all those years,
a little bit.
35 years of doing clinics for PSIA, and one of the complaints that I got at least once or twice a season is, he skis really fast.
And that's a problem?
Yeah, what's wrong
that's
with that?
Complaint?
Are you kidding? Of course, who do I have as a coach? Bert Skall, Dogger Hidalgo, right? You know, I mean, you know.
Guys that you grew up skiing.
You think I don't ski fast? You know, you should ski with the guys I'm chasing all the time, right? You know, only two of the best skiers on the planet.
Yeah.
Well, Sam, how are you enjoying retirement?
I like it a lot. I try not to talk about it too much because, you know, Paula is still working.
Okay.
And, you know, doesn't want to hear any of that. She's getting closer. I think she's formulated an exit strategy, but it's probably three, 4 years away yet. And,
but selling real estate, you never have to really completely retire.
No, you know, I think she's ready to be done. You know, every time she has great customers, she comes home and she's like, you know,
that was awesome.
This is great.
Yeah.
You know, I'll do this for 1,000 days. I got 1,000 days left. And then she deals with people who don't really want to listen. They come from out of state and they, you know, this isn't our first house that we've ever bought. And she goes, well, it's obviously the first time you've tried to do real estate here in Summit County. And, you know, she'll come home after dealing with some of, quote unquote, those people. And she's like, I got 500 days.
Yeah. But, you know, Tom and I felt that just driving up here to A-Basin today, there was we had two incidents where it was like, are you kidding? Where are you from? Have you ever driven in the mountains before in your life? You don't stop on the middle of Highway 6 going up the Loveland Pass when it's a two-lane road.
To take a picture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or for whatever reason, and put on your flashers.
Right.
And just say, here we are. It's like,
we're just stopping right here.
So I came into the office when I was working at Copper, and I was, you know, doing risk management stuff, and the risk manager for Copper was a guy named Rob Nickram.
Yeah, Moose, I remember Rob.
Moose,
yeah.
Big guy.
Moose, yeah.
And Rob had a phenomenal sense of humor. You know, wasn't afraid to sort of call you out when you needed to be called out, and you know, I certainly needed that once in a while. And I came in hot, just grumbling about somebody who, you know, pulled the turn right in front of me and stopped and then decided not to turn and didn't have the turn signal. And he just said, just remember, Sam, they've never been here before. You have.
Yeah.
Right? And so it was one of those reminders. But
you know
still,
what? I remind myself of that all the time when that happens. And I'm in some beach town in Mexico in a rental car, and I have no freaking clue where I am, and I can't read the signs, and I'm not sure what's going on, and I'm sitting there going, what? And everyone's flipping me off and cussing me out in Spanish, and I'm going, I've never been here before. Yeah, so.
So Ann was in the parking lot of Whole Foods a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was piles of snow or something, so she pulls into a parking spot, and then backs out to try and square up and make room for the space next to her, and some kid in a Subaru, you know, with baggy pants and a, you know, is screaming at her, you know how to freaking drive up here, go back to Denver. She's like, wait a minute,
and then she
where are you from?
And on the back bumper of his car, he's got a bumper sticker that says, namaste, motherfucker.
Yeah, she came home pretty hot after that.
Oh, bet. Yeah.
But.
Well, Sam, after you left Copper Mountain, you had quite an interesting career in the ski business. Talk about where you went.
Stayed with that. I went from Copper, from patrolling, and then, you know, risk management across Copper Winter Park Steamboat. Then I went to Beaver Creek for 5 years. And, you know, would see you guys over there for the World Cup. And Leon was over there.
I have a great picture of you and I standing next to a root beer brown metallic Audi. It's like a $100,000 car, and we're standing because Audi's the sponsor for the World Cup.
Yeah.
And there's you and I standing there looking young.
We had different colored hair then.
Yeah. Darker.
Yeah.
And more
darker,
of it.
Yeah. And more of it. A lot more of it, yeah.
So 5 years at Beaver Creek, and then I came back to Copper and worked for the Metro District, running the Metro District for a couple of years, and then went over to Powderhorn. And I was mountain manager at Powderhorn.
You know, one of my biggest regrets is when you were at Powderhorn, I've never skied Powderhorn. I wanted to come over, and you invited me several times to come and ski with you, and I never was able to put that together, and I regret that, because if anyone would have given me the right tour of Powderhorn, Sam, it would have been you.
And, you know, there were plenty of spots that I hadn't even gotten to yet, right?
Really?
We had a pretty tough snow year that forced the closure of the ski area a month and a half early. We were on the bottom 90 vertical feet of the ski hill on one beginner lift, two beginner trails.
Ooh.
In mid-February.
Wow.
And so they kind of laid everybody off, and I came home and after being there for two seasons, and when the following year came, they'd already entered into a new agreement with a small ski area operator that had some ski areas back east and some in the Pacific Northwest, and they brought in all their people, and I at that point pretty much retired from the ski business. But it was a phenomenal little ski area.
Absolutely.
You ski there, Tom?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
The thing is that, you know, there's places like that all over the country, I suspect.
Yeah.
But when I got there, you know, I gravitated toward people on the ski patrol because, you know, that was my background. And you know, first of all, they're like, well, why did you come here? You know, you've worked at Copper and Winter Park
Beaver
and Steamboat and Beaver Creek, you know. You know. Why did you come here? And I said, well, you know, there were a couple of reasons. But when you guys talk about it being busy, I look up the trail and I see five or six people on each trail.
Yeah.
My definition of busy is a little different.
Yeah.
And so it was really refreshing to
have
it be a
quieter. That's one reason we like Ski Cooper.
Yeah. Same sort of thing.
You know, it's you go up there and there's you know, not that many people. And it's changed. They've gotten busier in the last few years. It's really changed. But we used to go up, and Ski Cooper was like private ski area. You know, and there's so many little places like that we just love. And that's because we grew up. This is my 72nd consecutive season at A-Basin. And imagine what it was like here when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Especially when they opened Keystone.
I mean,
so the reason we're sitting in the A-frame right now, we're supposed to be here for 2 years, and it's still here. It's because all the money went to Keystone to open Keystone, right? And the A-frame, and I never liked the A-frame because it was temporary. It was a missile silo.
Somebody in the ski business at Copper at one point said, there's nothing more temporary than a permanent structure and nothing more permanent than a temporary structure.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, no, I took four lessons at Loveland Valley when I was 13 through a Jefferson County rec program.
On a bus.
You got
right?
in a
school?
Van. In a van.
Okay.
You got your skis from Gart Brothers.
Yep.
And, you know, then you just dropped off at the Jeffco Rec Center and they van... You piled into the van, and away we went to Loveland Valley. So I took four lessons at Loveland Valley. And then my brother was working here, running the rocket pommel that went up international.
Oh, yeah. And I've told you about that.
Oh, yeah.
And so, about the spring.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So I finished my four lessons there and came here. And, you know, I'm a 13-year-old kid. I hadn't gone through a growth spurt, right? I was 5 feet tall. And my brother said, just, all right, here's how it works. Grab this thing, and I'm going to pull this rope, and away you're going to go. Well, it would lift you off of your feet, right?
How many times have I told you this?
And
Dogger and I would actually pull the spring down farther to get lifted up higher.
Yeah.
Right?
When you're a little kid,
you get launched pretty far.
By the time you rode it, Sam, we've been riding it for 10 years.
So it wasn't exactly a successful uphill endeavor the first time I did it. But, came here and finished out that season here. Would have been 71.
Oh, shit.
Right? And then this place got sold.
Right.
And the new guy came in. He was a bit more conservative. All of you hippies, go work for that place that's opening over there on the other side of the reservoir, which was Copper Mountain. And so most of the people that I knew that were here, Art Burroughs, Charlie Ray.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Eddie Lincoln.
There were still
my brother.
There were still people
Chuck
camped.
Julin.
Well, there were still people camped out in the parking lot all season.
Yeah,
there were guys who had campers and trailers in the parking lot would stay there all season, and they'd come in and you didn't really shower. You just kind of washed off in the restrooms and. You know, and that was it. And there were a lot of hippies.
And so, you know, all of the people that I knew that, had, you know, were high school buddies of my brothers that were working here all went to Copper. And the very next year, that's where I was. You know, my brother and a guy named Duffy Wilson, who was the patrol director two before me. They were running the parking lot. And so I would come up and park cars for 2 hours in the morning and get a lift ticket. And then, so that was my second year of skiing. And then the third year, I had a season's pass. I was delivering the Denver Post on the west side of Lakewood. And, you know, I thought I was rich because I had an income. And I season's passes from that point on, from the time I was 15 on at Copper. So
my relationship with Copper started in 1971 when I was playing gigs in Vail, and this guy liked my music, and then he bought me a drink and a beer, and we started talking about skiing, and well, ski with me tomorrow, and so I've never been a ski instructor. I've just been a ski racer my whole life, and so I was giving him some pointers, and he goes, wow, that really helped my skiing, and you were awesome. He comes to my gig the next night, and then he goes, hey, listen, I want to take you for a special thing. There's a snowcat tour at that new area they're building on the other side of the pass. He didn't even know the name of it. That new ski area, and I've got two seats, and I want you to go with me. So I skied Copper the year before it was open to the public in a snowcat tour. As a tip for playing music. How cool is that?
So that probably would have been Chris Coleman driving the snowcat.
Yeah, right.
Andy Daly would have been, you know, the first ski patrol director.
Right.
Kevin Williams was the first ski patrol director. Andy started patrolling in Aspen and then came over here. And I don't think he patrolled here. He was mountain manager here pretty quickly.
Well, you know what?
At Copper.
And then Dogger, you know, was instructing at Crescent Butte.
Yep.
And he came over, he and Ballaroo and all those guys came over to teach at Copper.
Right.
And so Dogger's walking up the steps at Keystone to go to a gig with a 12-pack of beer, and he did brand new cowboy boots, and the pointy toe trips on the steel stairs, and he knocks out his two front teeth.
Oh, jeez.
So now we're having a benefit for Dogger to buy him new teeth. And he goes, a friend of mine, Mo Dixon's going to be playing for it. So come on up and bring your guitar. So I came up, and that was, 43 years ago? And that's how I met Mo Dixon.
Gotcha.
Right? And
gotcha.
We came up and started playing. And so Mo and I are still doing gigs together. I mean, you know, and the thing is, we went skiing the next day because we started talking. And the next day we went skiing. It's like, we could play guitar. And Mo and I are kind of build alike. We're both little squatty fuckers. And we would always show up on the same boots and the same skis.
Yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
just rip. And he was still coaching Lindsey Vonn when she was 12 years old back then and shit, you know. And
well, he was one of the first guys that kind of took Paula under his wing and showed her places on the hill at Copper that here's a stash. And so she was following Mo around. And, you know, I can't tell you how many people I run into in all parts of the country.
But no Mo.
When I say, yeah, you know, I spent a lot of time.
He's international.
Spent time in the ski business, and I worked at Copper Mountain for a long time. And they're like, "Oh, do you know
Mo Dixon?"
Because
yeah.
they've gone and seen him play.
And what's sad is how they treat him.
That I don't know.
Oh, he doesn't. They treat him like they don't even know him.
Well, there's so many people that have been turned over at that place that they probably don't know him. They don't know the history.
Well, it's new people. Yeah, it's new managers every year
in the restaurants.
Yeah. I mean, Copper Mountain should revere him. They should build a statue to him. He has brought thousands of people to that ski resort, and they don't get it.
Yeah. I still see Trish.
Oh, so do I. She's awesome. Talk about an athlete.
Yeah. No, I see her when I was out ride my bike in the Frisco Peninsula, and she was out walking with Pat Schmidt.
Yeah.
And I can't remember who
Katie
else.
Ulander.
Maybe.
Or Katie's mom. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it was Karen.
Karen.
And those are all, you know, I mean, I met Karen when I was probably 13 or 14.
Yeah.
When I was working for CJ, Chuck Julin, in the little repair shop they had in the old day center, coming up on weekends.
Well, Mo and Trish are Katie Ulander's godparents.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Katie is the skeleton racer in the Olympic, four Olympics she's been in. Mo and I did a benefit for her to get her, raise her money to get on the U.S. team. It's because she, you know, it's expensive, as you well know.
Yeah.
I mean, you're gonna invest money to get to the point where you can make any money. So,
yeah.
And Katie's still at it. Summit County gal.
She is not quitting.
Wow.
That girl will never quit.
It's just amazing. Tenacity.
So her dad was a Major League Baseball player.
Yeah.
For the Royals.
I can't remember who he played for.
Kansas City.
That was kind of a big deal, you know.
No, it was a big deal.
When Karen married him, and then pretty quickly along came Katie. And, you know, Summit County kids, Summit County High School. And then it's like, oh, yeah, she's racing skeleton. And you're like, wait a minute.
I still have a hat.
You know, where around here did a kid learn how to race skeleton?
I have a skeleton hat that's, you know, shows the sled and then with a skull on it. And she signed it because it was for the benefit that we did for him.
Awesome.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite hats.
And she keeps on going.
That girl will never quit.
Yeah, that's amazing. Summit County girl.
Well, Sam, I can't tell you how much fun it is to visit you here on the rebirth of the Snow Show.
Yeah.
The Colorado Snow Show now. And, you know, I'm really glad you guys got to go out and make some turns for me today.
We made every other turn to the left.
Well,
in your honor.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
That was right.
Because I forgot that that's how it works.
I had to remind Sam about that.
Every other turn goes left.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know. That's all you have to remember.
And when he said that, I went, yeah. And corduroy.
Yeah, yeah.
What's corduroy good for?
Pants.
Pants.
There we go.
Yeah. Tommy, the consummate engineer.
So, you know, the ski surface was, you know, as good as it's been all year. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to rub it in, but, you know, thank you for bringing me up on a day when we could go do that. We'll go out again, Leon.
Yeah, absolutely we will. And so great to be with you. My love to the family.
Thank you.
And,
thank you.
You know, I've known those kids since they were born. I remember when you and Paula got married. So we go a long way back. And Tommy, it's so much fun that we can bring back the vibe of the Snow Show.
And every episode, we bring back the vibe with an original episode from back in the day when we did the show on Crystal 93.
On Crystal and on the radio every weekend. And to this day, we still have people telling us, I miss the Snow Show.
Yeah. And now it's here online.
Yeah. Free.
Streaming.
Streaming.
Streaming. Streaming.
Well, you know, I'll mention to Ann that we talked about her all day. And
perfect.
She was the star of the show.
And Ian. Yeah. And, you know, when you start getting to where you want to talk to new people instead of old farts like me, you know, look her up. I'm sure she'd love it.
Yeah, we'll definitely have Ann on the show.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
Ann rescued us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and you talked about getting Ballarood on the phone, too.
So we can get Ballarood on the phone. I'm sure he'd love that.
I just saw him, unfortunately, at one of our dear friends' memorial services, but it was so great. Ballarood and I just stood there with our arms around each other for like 5 minutes going, Jesus, we don't, you know, he's a farmer now.
He's an ungentlemanly farmer. No, Ballarood.
I used to love to watch him run gates because that boy was quick.
He could ski.
He could ski, man.
He could always ski. And he always had a sense of when I was getting a little worked up when I was patrol director, when I was getting tough to be around, and he'd call me up. Hey, I need you to come look at something. You know, dead serious. I need you to come look at something. All right. You know, I'm in between meetings. I'd, you know, throw my boots on and go up the hill, and I'd find him. And it's like, okay, what do I need to see? And he goes, you don't need to see anything. You just need to get out of the office. You know, you needed to come up the hill and calm down a little bit.
Rude's always been great that way.
He was good at, you know, moderating my ups and downs. So
it's always good to have somebody you can do that.
I love him for that.
I do that for Tom all the time.
Appreciate that.
Tom just gets so worked up.
Yeah, all the time.
In
a frenzy.
Yeah, in a frenzy. It's like, I got to do this radio show. Oh, my God. There's so many buttons to push.
Which one do I push next? I'll do this.
Here comes a Crystal 93 Snow Show flashback to January of 2011 at Arapahoe Basin.
The Snow Show with Tom Fricke and Leon Littleburg on Crystal 93.
Tommy, ever since I was a little kid, I've been ripping down here at A-Basin into the TB Glades, and you just told me what TB stands for.
Taco Bell.
So it's time for the Taco Bell safety meeting with our buddy Bumpy. Hey, Bumpy, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, Leon, great to see you. Glad to be here.
Here we are in the TB Glades on A-Basin. Taco Bell Glades for the Taco Bell safety meeting.
Well, you know, there's nothing we like doing more than standing around in the trees sharing safety.
That's right. Very important to be safe on the hill.
And Bumpy, you know, you've got a cool thing going with the Beacon Basin and all the cool stuff you're doing, but man, safety's premier with you patrol boys.
It is, you know, and today's my day off, and I definitely take my share of days off, but safety never takes a day off.
Oh, dude, yeah. There it is.
That's right.
It's our mantra for the day. Safety never takes a day off.
But one of the reasons I'm here is because the Beacon Bowl is coming up, and we all love a good bowl competition every so often.
Oh, yeah, right.
And we need to get more people involved in this. It's a great event. There's a lot of great prizes. There's raffles. There's silent auction. There's beer. You guys,
I've heard of that.
We love to have that too. And it's a fun competition. We've got an amateur one for just somebody who's playing with their beacon in the backcountry.
Yeah, what is the Beacon Bowl?
I'll get into it. Yeah, we've also got a pro division as well. But the bottom line is we'll do a single round where you got to get out there and we'll have a probe out there and you have to hit the target. You bring in your own beacon, you ski into the area, boom, you hit the target, the time sounds.
And the target's buried in the snow.
Yes, it is. And we have several different ones, so it's not a giveaway. Like like, hey, the old guy went right here. I'm going to go right there. So it doesn't quite, it's not the quite that
guy.
Easy
the old
for
guy. Yeah,
I meant the last guy I should have said.
Oh, okay. But yeah, he's hanging out
the
with
the three
us,
of us, yeah, you know, that's how we go.
Yeah.
But, and then what we'll do is we'll take the top five amateurs and the top five pros, and they come back for the final round.
Nice.
And that's where we get into the digging and the shoveling and, you know, not just striking the target, but getting that shovel out, using your own probe pole. So the preliminary rounds, you're just using our probes, but you get in the finals, that's where you got your own probe, your own shovel, and you physically have to dig it out of the snow and usually throw it in the air as high as you can, because there's nothing better than having a good time in that.
Do we got to make reservations to get in on the Vika Bowl?
Absolutely not. I believe you'll be able to sign up that day until 10 a.m., I'm guessing.
Okay. At the A-frame.
The A-frame.
Yeah. Is there any information on the website?
There's a bunch of information on the website. We're going to have a bunch of posters out around.
Posters!
It is a lovely poster this year, I got to say.
You'll
know why I like it.
Beacon Bowl poster to enhance the boudoir.
Yes.
There's this lovely little golden retriever I know named Ruby, who's on the poster quite a bit.
I'm Ruby's Facebook friend.
There you go. Dogs aren't supposed to have their own Facebook pages.
Okay.
And she's not a dog. She's a human.
She's a human. We love Ruby.
So what's the date of the Beacon Bowl?
It's February 5th, Saturday.
All right, coming out.
And so, you know, we've got a month to come here. We also do have a Beacon Basin here at A-Basin that's BCA provided the equipment. It's right at the bottom of Lenaway Lift, just a little to the east at the base of the east wall.
Right.
And this is open to the public anytime they want. We want them to come in there. Got four different targets. Feel free to turn one, two, three. If you want to go crazy, turn all four on.
And it's all practice.
See how you're good. Yeah, and it's great practice. We got a month now. I want to get people out there and get practicing so we really see what you can do with these things. And the bottom line, this is all fun and games, but it is serious business too. Because, you know, God forbid your friend is buried in the backcountry or somewhere. You don't just have to have the equipment. You got to know how to use it.
Yeah. Very important.
Well, and you know, A-Basin is really proactive with that, providing all the cert training and everything for avalanches up here, and you guys do an amazing job. But you know, with all that great stuff you got going on for you, Bumpy, my favorite thing to do is chase you through the trees, and it's snowing, and the snow is perfect, and you know, it's nice chatting with you, dude, but I gotta ski, okay? So, it's called Skiing Not Standing.
Another Taco Bell safety meeting here in the TV Glades at Arapahoe Basin.
The Taco Bell Glades!
Leon Littlebird and Tom Fricke. They'll be back with more Snow Show fun on Crystal 93.